Everybody's able to be out, up and about this morning. Got a few out. I saw Marshall's back teaching for Anna this morning, so others were visiting him that way I'm aware of, but anyhow, glad to have you here. Before we get started, I'm going to mention this book here. These are the videos I've been showing, and whatever, put out by a company called Satellite Bible Atlas. And I got this idea from Trent and Rebecca Dutton. But they've been over there in Jerusalem studying, if y'all know that, for archaeology and stuff like this. This book's like $35, but it's one of the best sets of maps I've ever seen from that whole area over there. And of course, the maps are on, the videos are on YouTube, so no charge for them or anything, but you want these, and then all these pictures and maps come with them. So very good book. If you'd like to get it sometime, look at the maps there. Okay, this morning we're in 1 Samuel 18 and 19. What is the situation with Saul right now? What's going on in his life? Yeah, having mental problems. He has turned away from the Lord. Back in chapter 8, they wanted a king. 9 and 10, was put in as king with the anointing by Samuel. And then by chapter 13, he's already offered a sacrifice he wasn't supposed to offer, disobeyed God. He's going to reject him from being king. And then he goes on into 15 with the Amalekites and, again, does not do what God asked him to, did not destroy the king, Agag, and all the animals like he was told to annihilate them, totally wipe them out. And God totally turned him off then. And Samuel then went and anointed who to be king? David. David's going to be king. Now, David's not king yet. Saul's still here. He's still a king. So what's David doing? He's serving in the court, right, of Saul. And he's, when Saul gets these evil spirits, these depression fits or whatever they are, then David plays for him and tries to soothe him with music. We talked about that some last time. So that kind of gets us up to where we are now. We start out today then with, and see the relationship between Jonathan and David in the first part of chapter 18 and move on from there. A couple of things involving Saul's daughters here next. So let's move into this. Whoops. So we're going to break in then into kind of three parts here. First relationship between Jonathan and David, this little short part, the first part of the chapter. And then Saul's obsession, I guess is the word, with killing David. Jealousy and whatever comes into play there. And we'll look a little bit at Psalms 59 as we go into that. All right. First part of chapter 18. Who is Jonathan? Saul's son. Okay, so Saul is king. Jonathan's his son. What would you expect to be happening to Jonathan down the road sometime? He's going to be king, all right? More than likely, that's what we normally assume in the process of things here. So if that's true and Jonathan realizes what's going on, not that he may not know that David's been anointed to be king, but he can pretty well see the political winds, the way things are going here, that what would he expect his relationship with David to be? Who's killed 1,000? Who's killed 10,000? Saul's killed his thousands and David is 10,000. We'll talk about that more in a minute. And so David's rising in prominence. So what would you expect out of Jonathan toward David? Resentment, jealousy, that kind of stuff maybe. Now, I can see that very easy coming along here. But, on the contrary, what is Jonathan's relationship with David? Love him as his own soul, okay? Love him just like he loved him on self there. So we see this very strong bond, this very strong relationship between Jonathan and David. David still got this, the recognition having killed Goliath there. And Saul recognizes that, and he's serving there. He says, I'm going to go home to his father's house. I mean, he's going to be here serving me in the court, as I said earlier. So Jonathan then makes this covenant, this pact with him. What does Jonathan give David? His royal robe, okay? He takes his royal attire off, even his sword, his belt, all the stuff that would go with the, being the son of the king, and gives it to David. That's how much he loves him. Just like he was his own brother, one of David's children, if you would, there. And so Jonathan and David are very, very close. And when Jonathan is in David's service, things are going well with him. David's in Saul's service, things seem to be going well for Saul here. And then this jealousy thing keeps popping back up here. Maybe Jonathan knew what was going on as far as the politics is concerned, to see what's happening down the road. And yet there's no resentment. There's no jealousy on Jonathan's part. So the first few verses here of chapter 18 talk about this relationship between Jonathan and David and how close they are. And we're going to see that playing out in the next few chapters here some more. Now, let's turn our attention back to Saul. Saul and David. Jonathan's going to be in the story, but let me just come back in now with Saul and his attitude toward David. So, Saul is still there. David comes in and plays for him to soothe him out here. And why does Saul just hate, if you, I guess is the right word, why does he hate David? Why does he want to kill David? Yeah, the Saul the legend thing, this jealousy thing. I mean, why didn't Saul go out and kill Goliath? You have God behind you, the faith that David did. But when David did that then, they put David up in this recognition by the army and by the people and by these ladies singing. And Saul gets this made jealousy, this hatred for David here. So he starts these plots and several things he's going to do now in this chapter to try to take David out of the picture here. Okay, going back to when he first killed Goliath, the suspicion that comes on from that, and this thing of David killing Saul's thousands and David's 10,000. One commentary says, don't know if that's a real actual number that David actually had killed 10,000 people himself in battle, or if it's just the recognition he'd gone out and the relationship between who they had fought, who they had conquered, and the size of their battles, relationship between the two, 1,000, 10,000, that David had actually killed 10,000 people, or Saul had killed 1,000 people. Don't know if that's actually a true number as opposed to just a recognition of the relationship between the two. You know, one 10 times more powerful and better warrior than the other one. But, it gets Saul's attention. And so, Saul gets more intent on himself and his bit up anger and this jealousy toward David, and then he does even caring about what's going on in his kingdom, because that's his obsession. Totally obsession now is to take care of David. So let's look at some of these plots that Saul has going on here now to try to kill David. The first is in verses 10 through 16, and we're actually in the palace now. And what does David come in and do for Saul? He plays this music. We talked about sometimes we put on music to soothe us when we're being a little down or out or something like that. And so David would come in and play this music. So David is there playing for the king, playing for the king's benefit. Okay. They're in his service to him. And what's Saul got in his hand? Got a spear or a javelin type thing. Again, reading some of the commentaries, was recognized as the position of authority, the power, and having the spear, and it was never far from a king's hands at any point in time. So we see Saul, he has his spear in his hand, and David's playing for him, and this evil spirit, I told you last time, I don't understand all about what that means and how God works the evil spirit and whatever inside him. I know his disposition was there to accommodate that. This comes over him, and he wants David out of the picture. So right there while they're playing in the palace, what does Saul do? He draws back and throws a thing at David. What does he say he's going to do with him? Pin him to the wall. I mean, just drive it right through him and pin him to the wall. I want him to try to kill him. Literally try to kill him himself here with this. David dodges. He misses. And the time moves on a little bit. And now Saul comes up with another plot to try to kill David. So who's he going to use this time? His daughter, his oldest daughter. So he offers to give her to David as a wife. And David comes up and says, is this Merib? And what's Saul's idea? I give her to my wife. He goes out to impress her. He goes out to battles. And somebody's going to take care of him for me, right? I'm going to have somebody do my dirty work, in other words. I missed my spear, so I'm going to get married off here to the daughter. And he'll be trying to go to battle, win battles for her. And I won't have to kill him, but the Philistines will. Now, what kind of spoil this thing? Yeah, before he did, you know, he did give it to somebody else, but what was David's reaction to it? Yeah, why should I be the king's son-in-law? And what makes me worthy to be the king's son-in-law? I mean, my family, they're poor. I'm not the person that would be a king's son-in-law. Why should this happen? So Saul decides then to kind of, I guess, get back at David because of his reaction. So he goes and gives the daughter off to somebody else by the time they're supposed to be married. And we need to thank to Saul. Now, 2 Samuel 11, just hang on to it a minute. We're going to get one more thing in. We're going to come back and talk about 2 Samuel 11. And this thing here of taking somebody else to take care of your thing there. So, since that didn't work out with the older daughter, what did he find out now about his younger daughter? Oh, she's in love with David now. Okay, so he cranks his little scheming back up again, and since David doesn't think he's good enough to be the king's son-in-law, what's he have his servants go do? You kind of go talk to David, and you convince him that it's a good idea, okay? He has them do the plot here. So you go convince David that it'd be a good thing for you to be married to the king. It'd be a grand honor type thing here. And this time, David says that he doesn't have what? I don't have a dowry. I'm a poor man. I don't have a dowry to give for the king's daughter over here. And so Saul says, that's no problem. I can take care of that for you. You go kill me 100 Philistines and bring me their foreskins. Give me 100 Philistines. Now, what Saul really want? He's killing 100 Philistines. Well, I'm going to kill David, right? That's the whole idea behind the thing here. So David being a warrior, what did David think about this assignment to go kill 100 Philistines? Got that handled, man. That's no problem. I can take care of that. So he and his men go out and they kill 200 Philistines and bring them the foreskins back there for Saul. Now, again, I read another thing that said that it's not the, well, most commentaries actually listed the number 200. One guy said it probably wasn't exactly 200. It was just the thing that David would show how he could go out and outdo what Saul actually wanted to do here. So, I have no reason to doubt it. They actually went out and killed 200 Philistines as far as that goes. But. So, 100 Philistines is a dowry. David's got out and killed 200 Philistines. What does that kind of make Saul got to do now? He got to come through with it, right? So he gives Micah his daughter for marriage here, and that becomes David's wife. So now David is married to the king's daughter. He's a son-in-law here. And as might be expected, married into the royal family, what did that do to David's popularity even more? Raises him right back up beside the people. He's already our hero, and now he's married to the king's daughter, okay? Now, Saul comes back now in the first part of chapter 19, moving into it now. What commands he put out? kill David. That's it. This blatant, not me, I'm going to try to do it with the Philistines, I'm not trying to do it with my spear. He puts the order out to everybody, including his son Jonathan, kill David. I want him dead. Okay? Put David to death. He got that, the jealousy, the rage has gotten that bad about it. So what does Jonathan do? He didn't go out and kill David. What did he do? He goes, he talks to David about what's going on. And what did you tell Saul? Why do you want to kill David? What's he doing? This is Jonathan going to talk to his father, and he says, why? Why are you trying to kill David? For what reason? What's your justification? What's David done to you that you want to kill him? Okay. So Saul reacts how? He says, okay, I'll rescind the order. He agrees that, you know, you're right. I don't have any reason to do that. Jonathan's request here, he kind of backs off. So he puts David back in the court. So things are kind of going up and down with David and their relationship with Saul now. So he's back in the palace again. And his music again. Well, Saul got in his hand again. Here we go again, okay. David goes out and fights the king's battles. He's successful with his wars. And the jealousy starts raging again. And he's got his spear in his hand. And again, he throws it at David. And David escapes this time again. But this time it's not a matter of dodging it and kind of letting things settle down. This time it's done got serious. So David's got to run for his safety now. So he goes home to Micah, his wife, king's daughter. And Saul sends his men to David's house and says, what? Just don't let him escape. It's like they go there at night and they're waiting, they're watching the house, watching the front of the house so he can't get out, till morning. And they're going to kill him in the morning, like when he comes out of the house, I guess, for morning light, the way it appears here. So, what does Micah do for him? Now, she's kind of caught between who? Between her father and her husband here, okay? So she loves David, so she's going to help him escape. So she lets him down to this basket. We got to kind of swim out the back way so he can escape away from where the soldiers are there watching for him. So she has him escape, and then she goes to his bed, and what's he put in the bed? This image or a household idol. Now, it's a little bit confusing to think about here. What's this image going to do in the bed? What's the idea behind it? Make it look like a body's there, okay? So it can't be, sometimes these teraphims are little household idols. Go back to Rachel when she stole her father's idols. What size idol are we talking about? Something small because she sent her saddlebag and she's sitting on it now. Now, a little short saddlebag type statue would not fit into a bed to make it somebody think it's a man there, right? So it's got to be something much larger than that. Some of the translations, they just say an image, something a household image, something a household god. So apparently it was something there that she's going, that it's there for worship probabilities. It is a household image, a household god. But it's got to be something bigger. Because it goes in a bed to make them think it's a body there. David's in the bed sick. And then she takes this goat hair quilt and she makes it up perhaps like his hair there. So if you come in and look at the bed, you see David's there sick. So when soldiers from Saul come in, she says, David can't go with you because he's in a bed sick. What does Saul say now? Go bring him bed and all, okay? That's no problem. So if he's in a bed sick, bring me the whole bed. I can kill him. Specifically says, bring him here so I can kill him. Bring the whole bed. Yeah, he said, we're going to have him get well. I'm killing him. So Saul's upset at his daughter because she has taken the side of David instead of his side. Now, let's talk about Micah a minute. And we'll come back with some application stuff at the end like we usually do. But what's Micah done? Think about some of the things she's done here. How many times has she lied in this process here? Several. Okay? Just outright lied. Alright? And then you got this whole idea of this image, this household God image being in the house, apparently there for worship purposes. So that would make you concerned about her a little bit there. So even though she's taking up trying to help her husband out, the way she does it is not a commendable process here. So think about that. Even though you think about her doing the good and what she did for David, yet the process she went through was not commendable. Her lying. Now, before we jump off of that, let's go back and think about Saul and the Philistines and sending David out to battle and having him go get the dowry of the 100 people. But you want the Philistines to kill David. Go over to 2 Samuel chapter 11. What's that chapter about? 2 Samuel chapter 11. Flip over about it. That's about David when he committed adultery with Bathsheba, right? And what kind of problem, we'll get that right at the end of the quarter. That's kind of where we end this quarter. So what kind of problem that present for David? He's got to get rid of who? Uriah, Bathsheba's husband. So how does he do it? Send him out to battle, okay? So what's David going to do later on that's being done to him now, okay? That's the idea I'm getting at here. So the very thing that Saul was trying to do to David here and put him out in the battle, having to go fight the Philistines, and all this so that he would be killed, is a very tactic that David's going to use when you get over to 2 Samuel chapter 11, when he's got to get rid of Uriah. He don't want to personally kill him himself, even though Saul would have. Could bring him on the bed, I'll kill him, he said. But he used the same tactic here to get rid of him. Yeah. Doug? Yeah. Right. So he's... Right. Well, I guess he's going to fight 100 of them hand to hand. He thought one of them might get him anyhow, right? So, yeah. But the idea is I'm going to have my enemy take care of killing my problem here. And that's what we're going to get to with some of these applications in a minute. Randall? Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Two or three times in the chapter, Randall points out, and I should have mentioned it. The specific phrase is used that David behaved wisely. David behaved wisely. Because who's got David's heart now? God has, okay. Later on, David gets further into life here and he gets these situations he shouldn't be into and he starts behaving very unwisely. Even with Bathsheba and then the things that progress from that. And like I said, we'll get to that right at the end of the quarter. That's where we end this quarter, and the next one starts right after chapter 12 there. Okay, anything else? We'll jump off here right quick. We'll look at Psalm 97, 95. We'll come back here. All right, let's look at this psalm over here a minute right quick. Psalms 59, and if you look at the very top of it, more than likely in your Bible, it's going to say that this was a psalm composed when David was in distress because of the soldiers of Saul coming to kill him here when Micah helps him escape. That's basically the thing. Again, I've read one commentator that says that has nothing to do with it. It's more like the time of Nehemiah when Sanballat and all giving him the problems because he said the phrases you don't even fit. But everything else I've read, looked at, said that, puts it right with what the caption here in the psalm has got, the superscription, if you will, that it was David. Now, I said, sat there looking at this yesterday and Shirley's sitting there and I said, I don't understand exactly a little bit about this thing. All right, here's the soldier, they come to kill David, right? And Micah helps him escape. So he escapes Saul and all the way out he stops in Psalms 59, right? They don't quite seem like that's the way he would write a psalm at this time. So when David writes this psalm, I don't know. looking back at his time, the stress he was in at this time, he wrote it sometime later on, or did he have time shortly after this someplace when he got to a more safe place to write it? Exact timing, I don't know, but it seems very much. It's written about his attitude and what's going on in his mind, what's going on with God, his relationship with God, as Saul is coming in trying to kill him. So the Psalm depicts David as one who's being oppressed, and that's exactly what's going on. But where's his trust? Trust is totally in God for deliverance. That's what David depicts in his Psalm here. Not Saul at this time. There's no trust in God. He's looking totally at his own things. He's going off his own tangents. That's why he behaves so unwisely, because he goes here trying to scheme and put to death. I told y'all earlier, the first part of the quarter, this is one of the first quarters I ever taught where I didn't make my own slides up. Well, this is not one of my words, okay? It's got to come from Mike or Jeff, one on which one used that big imprecatory word there. This kind of psalm. But what it means is it's a psalm about the condemnation, the judgment that's going to come on my enemies or God's enemies. That's what the psalm's kind of about. It's one that judgment or condemnation on those who oppress me or those who would do God wrong or something. That's what that word means. That's the kind of psalm it is. David calling for judgment on those who would do him harm, if you will. Okay. So, kind of what the psalm summarizes out to. David's trust in God. He seeks his refuge in God. He doesn't know why he's suffering. What's David done wrong at this point? Nothing. I mean, there's nothing we know of that he's done that would cause this jealousy and stuff on Saul's part as far as being wrong. Yeah, but that was called, the jealousy was caused by what they were doing. Yes, right, I agree. And then the next point here, is anything about David striking back at Saul when Saul was striking him? No, there's no vengeance on David's part. As a matter of fact, we're going to get into it a little bit later on, but when David does have a chance to take vengeance on Saul, what's he going to say? I remember? I will not touch the Lord's anointed, okay? Even he would need a chance to kill Saul, he wouldn't. So there's no striking back, no vengeance on David's part if he goes back into it. So he's suffering all this time in the actions of Saul, no vengeance back, waiting for God's judgment to come out here. So, let's run back to the plots here right quick now, kind of a summary of what that psalm's about. So, David escapes, last part of the chapter here, back in chapter 19. And who's he go to? Go see Samuel, okay, back at Ramoth, where Samuel's hometown was. So he seeks refuge with him. Saul finds out about it, so he sends messengers up there. And again, I don't understand all about this. I'll just tell you I don't. When it says they were prophesying, but three different times Saul sends servants there, and they join in with this. Apparently a school of the prophets there, but Samuel had with him, and they start prophesying. Saul comes up there himself finally. He's going to seek David. But as Saul gets there, what's he start doing? He starts prophesying as well. And it seems as though from you read about this and try to dig into it a little bit that his mind state changes because of the company he's with, and the vengeance part goes, and he turns back to more the kind of person he ought to be with this, and gets caught up in the company of the prophets there, and starts talking about things that would be, more in line with their reasoning and thinking, as opposed to what his evil mind would be at the other times. And then he takes off what? Saul. So he strips down. If you read it, it actually takes off his royal robes. He does not want to be royalty at that point. He wants to be in with the prophets, be part of them, because he's caught up in this process here. And look at this. Now, one little factor, it's a little bit confusing here, I guess. Remember back in chapter 15, at the end of the chapter, after Samuel had told Saul about his sin and not taking care of Agag, and Samuel starts to leave, and Saul grabs his garment and tears it, and then Samuel comes back, kills Agag. What's that right at the end of that chapter about Saul and Samuel? I will say, since Samuel would not see him again until the day of his death. And yet, what do we have here? He's there with him. So Saul goes there. So, little confusing point there if you're not careful with it. But back in 15, it says that Samuel would not see Saul. Simply meaning Samuel would not go to give Saul advice. He would not be there to be the spoken of the Lord with him anymore. He had put Saul out because 15, remember that chapter where God just totally cut Saul off, nothing more to do with him anywhere. And so Samuel would not have a relationship with Saul anymore. He would not go see Saul. He would not go advise Saul, whatever. Now, this chapter, and that's what it is, that the next time Samuel's going to speak to Saul, anything like that, it's going to be at the day of Saul's death. We'll get to it later. This time it's Saul coming to Samuel under a different circumstance. So Samuel did not go see Saul anymore in this advisory role, whatever there. It seems that Saul did see Samuel here this day, but that was what caused what Saul did. Just a little bit confused. You start thinking about that. You think about chapter 15, they don't see each other again, period. What do they do here, apparently? Okay. They're in a different circumstance of what it was talking about there. I know that was all pretty clear, but. Okay. Anything before we go into this little application stuff that we missed on those chapters? All right, what can we learn from this stuff? And by the way, if you're teaching next quarter, anytime you're teaching our young folks, anytime you're thinking about this stuff yourself, don't just go through it for the narrative. Go through it and figure out, you know, what can we learn for us? What's going on here in these people's lives that we can learn from to teach us something? Particularly teaching our young folks back here, be sure to help them understand what it can do for them. So, who is after David? Who's trying to kill David? The Philistines? Saul is. Saul is. One of his own people is trying to kill him. So let's look at these verses here right quick. 1 John chapter 3. 1 John 3 and verse 13 says, do not marvel when, I got an echo here, do not marvel when who hates you? The world hates you. Well, we understand that, okay? And in John 15, it says, don't marvel that the world hates you. They hated you first. But there's also this idea there of being hated by those of our own people. Okay. Sometimes the people we're most loyal to will hurt us. It's like that's a double whammy to us there. Okay. Who did Jesus come to? His own. The house of Israel, okay? Taught them. That's the main ones he came to teach. And yet, who the very ones that turned their back on him? His own people. Even going down and put it down a little tighter, what city actually kicked him out? Tried to kill him. Nazareth, right? His own hometown. He went there and when he read and said, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing today. And they took it out and threw him off the brow of the hill. And that very hometown here of Jesus rebelled against him. His own nation rebels against him. They're the ones who killed him at the hands of the Romans. So sometimes it's people that we care about, that's close to us, that hurt us. Happens sometimes. But what about Psalm 59? Where did David put his trust? He trusted in God. He didn't take his eyes off of that. At least not at this point in time. Think about a minute. We talked about this a little bit earlier. About David's attitude towards Saul, even though he was mistreating him all this time. How did David look at Saul, and how do we look at those who might mistreat us? Romans 12. Repay no man evil for evil. Have regard for good in the sight of all men. As much as possible with you, do what? Live peaceably with all men. Okay? So think about that. Have to think about how people are treating us and our response to that. Again, back to Psalm 59 and what David did, rely on God in such times. 1 Peter 2, this is commendable, it's because of conscience towards God, one endures grief, suffering wrongly. What credit is if when you're beaten for your faults, you take it patiently, but when you do good and suffer, you take it patiently, it's commendable before God, and it goes with that. So, our patient endurance, not when we're suffering because we did wrong, but suffering when we didn't do wrong. It's a fourth there. And then one more. And this is what Hank mentioned in some of the earlier lessons. Just look how far envy and jealousy can take us. Look what it did to Saul. All the way. What has David done for Saul and for the nation of Israel? Won battle after battle for him, killed this giant that had been harassing them for how many days? 40 days, twice a day. David took care of it for him and gone to battle many other times for them. And yet Saul can't see past all that. It's the jealousy over the fact that he gets more praise than Saul did. It's all Saul's problem internally. Okay. Again, we got about a minute left. Somebody got something else you want to add before we wrap this up? Al? Sure it does. And I've actually heard comments about this relationship between Saul and Jonathan being something other than just a pure relationship. That's garbage. I'm sorry. No reason to believe that anyway. Yes. At this point, there's no reason, anything like that. Okay. We got what next time? 20 and 21, I think it is. Maybe a psalm. Let's see. 7. You got 20 and 21 and 2 psalms, 56 and 34. So if you'll read those a couple of times, get ready for that. We'll look at that Wednesday night. Okay.